From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. For many people, vaccines for flu viruses and COVID strains are extremely effective at warding off the diseases they're designed to protect against. But for some, including the elderly and people with chronic diseases, the results can be less effective. Laura Jensky, PhD, has worked in immunology and oncology at places like Purdue and Marshall Universities, studying the immune system and how it works. And she's been looking at progress in how vaccines are developed and how they're becoming more effective for more people. She's teaching a class on vaccine development this Thursday at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute in Boise, and she's joining us now. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, do we know why vaccines work better for some people than others?
Well, that is the million-dollar question, isn't it? It has a fairly complicated answer because the immune system is so complicated. There needs to be communication between the different aspects of the immune system. The innate immunity, you know, that's like the inflammation you get around a paper cut. Happens fast, but you're not immune to paper cuts. The long-lasting immunity is the job of the adaptive immune system. That's the lymphocytes, the T and B cells that provide the long-lasting, sometimes lifelong immunity. But there needs to be communication between the two of them. And chronic diseases, for example, really can mess up the communication. Aging is a big one, and that's what I'll be talking to the Osher class about. Aging, as you get older, the immune system becomes less effective. And that is a big feature of why vaccines fail so often in the elderly. And then there's genetics. So I think this is a very much underappreciated part of immunity. And that is, vaccines don't actually create antibodies. Vaccines, or the antigens, the foreign substances in vaccines, they select for T and B cells that pre-exist in our body that can respond to the antigen. And there are trillions of T and B cells in our body. A few of them respond to the antigen in the vaccine. And our genetics will help to determine which T and B cells are there available to respond.
So how can having a chronic disease then impact how a vaccine may or may not work?
I think the systemic inflammation is the biggest part of that. Think of chronic diseases like cardiovascular disease, diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis. These all have a systemic inflammatory condition associated with them. I guess the question is, which came first, the disease or the inflammation? I suppose there's evidence on either side. But regardless, when you have chronic inflammation, it skews the communication in the immune system toward that rapid paper cut type of response and away from that long-term protective immunity that the T and B cells provide us. You know, it's a balance and counterbalance. So when you have a chronic inflammation, you're pushing the immune system toward a rapid response, but tissue damage and away from what we're really looking for, which is that elegant, specific T and B cell response.
So let's talk a little bit more about aging and how that impacts vaccine effectiveness. Can you talk a little bit about that and our immune system as well?
And that will be a large feature of what we talk about at Osher. When you think about aging and you think about the DNA damage that we accumulate year after year, the insults that we receive from the environment, we realize that the aging immune system is going to have accumulated dysfunction. One expression of that will be metabolic changes. For example, our aging immune cells do not use glucose as effectively as our young cells. They, instead of using oxygen to metabolize the glucose, they use a less effective anaerobic process. So the bottom line is old T and B cells simply have less energy. It puts them in a state that's called immunosenescence, or, you know, immune aging. And there are several features of immune aging that help us to understand why a vaccine may not be as effective. One example is the accumulation of memory cells. So what are memory cells? When we have an immune response, over a period of days, we'll see antibodies in serum. We'll see T cells that are able to fight infected cells. Those are all called effectors. But we also have cells that reside in our bodies, stay there possibly our entire lives, and they're called memory cells. They have memory for the antigens, the vaccines, the bacteria, the viruses that we've seen throughout our life. Well, as we age, we accumulate a lot of memory cells, and that's good because that gives us long-term protection against measles and mumps and so on. But it reduces the number of new fresh lymphocytes. Scientists love to give names to everything, usually acronyms, but names. And so they call the fresh lymphocytes naive lymphocytes. And these are the ones that would respond to new vaccines. So when you think about the balance in an aging immune system, you have an accumulation of memory cells for diseases you may have seen years or decades before, and fewer of the cells that can respond to new antigens, a new threat that comes along, a new flu vaccine, a new flu virus, or as you know, that the COVID virus that none of us had seen before. Mm-hmm. So
can we talk? No, go ahead and finish your thought.
Oh, you know, I was just going to also comment to bring us full circle. You know, we talked about inflammation. The immunosenescent cells, the old immune cells, are much more likely to skew toward inflammation and away from the protective, long-lasting immunity.
So I want to talk a little bit more about vaccine development, because along with studying our immune system cells, you have also looked at vaccine development over time. So how have historical vaccines and modern vaccines actually differed?
That is such a fun question. The history of vaccines is amazing. You know, if we look over the last 1,000 years, we realize that the vast majority of the time, you know, 800 years or more, what was the response? What was the attack for diseases? Well, it was to give someone the disease. And I'm thinking specifically of smallpox. The original method for protecting people against smallpox was to literally take pus from the smallpox and inject it into people or have them inhale it. And surprisingly, in many cases, that was effective, but also sometimes it caused the disease, which was certainly not what you want a vaccine to do. And it wasn't until about 200 years ago that there was a major advance. And that was when an English physician called Dr. Jenner used cowpox to immunize against smallpox. They're related diseases. And he understood that cowpox was enough related to smallpox that it could protect. And that was sort of the tipping point between the old method and the new methods. So from that point forward, in the last 200 years, we've seen weakened viruses used as vaccines. We've seen killed viruses used like for polio. And in the last 40 years, we've seen improvements like purified antigens, like the flu virus. We've seen virus vectors. We've seen mRNA vaccines. So in the big scheme of things, the progress may seem very recent, but looking over a long history, we see that there really has been stepwise progress toward a very archaic way of protecting a smallpox and the elegant vaccines that we're seeing today.
So with that said, then, what are scientists doing to make vaccines more effective in senior citizens?
Well, the advances that we see today are mostly using high dose vaccines. I think if you look at the flu vaccines that are available this year and actually in recent years, you'll see that those that are recommended for persons 65 and older are high doses. And there's simply a numerical advantage there. You have more copies of the vaccine, more copies of the antigen to make its way throughout the body to look for those T and B cells that can react to it. But there's another component to that, a more, shall I say, esoteric scientific component. And that is, if you have more of the vaccine, more of the antigen around each reacting T and B cell, it delivers a stronger signal. And aging cells tend to be less responsive to signals that activate the cells. So if you can deliver a stronger signal to each cell, you're more likely to activate that old cell. The other thing that's used today are adjuvants. Well, adjuvants have been around for a long time, but the adjuvants today are much more sophisticated. They're not antigens. They're not specific in any way to one virus or another, but they do tend to boost the response overall.
Sorry, but we're running out of time. So I want to thank you so much for taking time to chat with us today. We've been talking with Laura Jensky.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We've been talking with Laura Jensky, PhD. She's teaching a class on the progress of vaccine development this Thursday, November 9th, at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute in Boise. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me, and I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on the Black experience. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get podcasts.